on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic. But at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
A big thank you to McDonald Merhome, because we are back on a still mild, wonderful day in Melbourne when you consider up north they have had rains that sadly have turned to tragedy. We can be thankful that here in Melbourne, though we're not credited for it, another beautiful Sunday morning and so much to talk about in the world of football. I do so, I'm fortuitous, with one of the wisest heads in the game, Robert Shaw, senior coach, senior footballer, still currently involved at the cutting edge of underage football through Brighton Grammar and Shorey. This was a round that afforded opportunities to sides to stand up and be counted. Some did, some didn't. It's not the end of the world, but in one way, we've seen the birth of, we can't say a top four team or even a finalist, but the genesis of a great team going forward, surely the Doggies. And then on the other hand, we're still on the tarmac taxiing with North Melbourne. So it was a very interesting start to round number five.
Well, it was, Mark. And when you looked at the at the draw, you know, it started on Friday night with a great occasion for Michael Malthouse, not matched by the really poor performance of his team. And then you looked at these games. You looked at Geelong Richmond, and you thought, well, there's the Tigers. If they can ever get them, this is the opportunity. Same for North. The door was open there for North because of the Spanger, Frawley, Lake situation. Poopolo, a late change. I know North are missing Del Santo and Wells. They really need them because they are excellent deliverers of the ball, and that was sadly missing in North's forays going forward. And then over the other side of the country, you thought, well, GWS, you're half a chance here. So I went with all those, not upsets, but the door was open. And as you said, opportunities for clubs to make a bit of a statement and make a move. All three of those clubs failed significantly in my mind. And then you had the Bulldogs. So I was disappointed in three teams because I gave them a real chance and my tips were completely wrong.
Well, this dynamic between West Coast and GWS now has some validity, and that is that every time they've met, West Coast have utterly thrashed GWS. And whilst, of course, that will eventually become history, in the short term, I think every West Coast player quite looks forward to playing GWS. And the one thing we can say last night, that was the closest GWS have ever got to the West Coast Eagles.
So, isn't it?
Yeah, they really don't match up against them. And unfortunately, they've done it at various venues. It's happened in Tasmania. It's happened over in Sydney. It's happened in Canberra. It's happened in Perth. So we'll go through all the states, but that one will put off the scale. The really interesting game for mine was Geelong-Richmond in that, for mine, North Melbourne and Hawthorn, we got a quick reminder. North Melbourne were up for the battle, and they've got depth, so they had to cover important losses, including the match day. Both teams, by the way, had changes on match day.
So you're saying wait for Black and
wait for Black,
White Cross, Poopolo.
Yeah, both important changes. North Melbourne, being the junior partner, is the one we look at. Can they cover losses? And they've done admirably. Wells, Del Santo, McMillan only played his first game, we know, this week. Obviously, weight out of the team and various others. We saw Zeeble play last week and this week after copping a crunching blow, but they were at the ready to replace him through the midfield. But I think we've just got a reminder, especially under the roof at Etihad, Hawthorn are as laser precision strong with their kicking as any team we've ever seen, and you better come up with something very intense to beat them, and North try and do that. We saw last year Hawthorn lost their cool against North and lost the game. This time they lost the cool and thrashed them. So, gee, it's hard to put Hawthorn off their tucker in the vacuum that his Eddie had under the roof.
Yeah, look, we'll go through it in a little while, but the kicking was extraordinary. And the number of times North Melbourne got the ball in good positions and then either missed Brown or a lead or it went wide. The number of times their forwards had to come forward and try and half-volley the ball up off the ground. And then you look at the delivery. They got four from Bruce, who does play both as a crummer and a leading player. Gunston was excellent. Segler.
And they both missed. They both missed. Yeah, they both missed, didn't they? Gettable goals.
I thought the matchup with Sean Makers came in. He did all right, but Brown looked a bit of a threat. But they couldn't put the ball to his preferred side. He had the... Look how tall, big his arms are. He took some great marks. He's an excellent kick for goal. Yes. But they couldn't get the delivery or organise their forward line enough to expose Schoenmakers. Brown won out. And you've got to give great credit there once again to Gibson, who we spoke about at length on Monday night, how they're going to use him given the three big blokes are out at the moment.
Hawthorn had plenty out, and we're going to do the game in full shortly. They had plenty out, but Del Santo and Wells are desperately needed against a Hawthorn, because Hawthorn being so committed, especially at Etihad, to precision possession football, will in transition for the opposition give some space to the midfielders, and Wells and Del Santo are the ones to tear you a new one. Unfortunately, they've torn old ones, and as a result, they're not playing. We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll look at North Hawthorn in depth. We'd love you to join in. These are teams that have had passionate supporters stand up for their players over the duration. And on Sunday morning, I wonder how Hawthorn supporters view not the physical approach to the game, that's lovely, not the unsociable approach to the game, but in the end, the reckless, dangerous, and probably detrimental to the team over the next month approach to the game by some of their absolute gilt-edged leaders. 9429 1116, we'll talk the game. And you can talk all the other bits and pieces, because there was plenty after the break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. North Melbourne.
So join in. Sing it one and all. Join in the chorus. North Melbourne's on the ball.
Hawthorn.
We're a happy team at Hawthorn. We're the mighty fighting Hawthorn.
When you got two bulls going at each other, like, I'm talking about two really, really talented sides, you know, both finished top four last year, then the spirit's going to be right in the contest. So it's very little surprise that it's pretty spirited in the first part of the game, but we're pleased with our endeavour and our hunt of the footy, and it got us away to some scoreboard pressure on the opposition this week.
Hawthorn are a dominant side for a reason, so you know, you've got to respond and stand up for yourself, and at the same time remain composed, and with those sort of things, I thought we did that reasonably well, but we were outplayed for the rest of the game.
They're two coaches who had their teams again go at it last night at Etihad Stadium. It's not the first time that this era's Hawthorn and North Melbourne have been at each other. Hawthorn, 19-16-130. In the end, it was a blowout result, but all night kept North Melbourne at arm's length, 10-10-70. In front of 38,077 at Etihad Stadium. And I guess in hindsight, there was a perfect storm brewing for another fiery encounter. That perfect storm being the previous history between the two sides, where North Melbourne do take a physical approach to try and prevent Hawthorn from playing precision keepings off. Hawthorn's response last year was meet fire with fire. The fact that Hawthorn were blown away early against Port Adelaide last week demanded an early response. And North Melbourne last year in the preliminary final were physically and basically mentally inadequate against Sydney. Having lost to Port Adelaide, if this side I'm sure it was impressed on them by Brad Scott. If they have aspirations to play in a grand final, let alone win a premiership, then they couldn't be easy beat and easy meat for Hawthorn. So fire was met with staunch resistance, but most of the fire came from Hawthorn, and some of it was, let's just say, crude. I'll leave it to Robert Shaw to go further. As far as the game is concerned, Robert Shaw will dissect now.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, look, super impressive. We've spoken about the people that are out on both sides. It would have been interesting had the much maligned at times Jared Waite played, because Stratton was able to handle Black very, very easily. Brown always looked dangerous with those long arms and his mobility, a terrific kick, and it was a good duel between Gibson and Petrie, with Hodge also going back there. The Hawthorn side's ability to organise their back line and provide extra numbers back there, they don't flood that back there. They've got special areas they go back in. You look at the game of Isaac Smith, you know, winger, midfielder going back. His ability to get across half-back, read the play, take intercept marks was absolutely critical. It was great to see Birchall get back in some really intense, hard-running form. I thought he was a real influence in the game. And once again, if Smith, Hill, Hill had 19, very, very lively, very creative with his run. If Smith, Hill and Birchall are having really good games, Mitchell back to his best as the centreman, and of course Hodge and Lewis doing what they do well, not what they did on the weekend, but just hard, in close, accumulating possessions. Hodge also had to go back on Petrie at times when they had to give some of these key backmen a little bit of a rest. And once again, the kicking, the precision kicking, the ability to put the ball to the right spot, make the right decision with the ball in hand, saw them get 11 goals out of Gunston, Bruce and Segler. It was a most impressive performance, a real professional, hard performance. I'm not condoning the incidents in any way, shape, or form, because they will find their ending during this week, and you know, Lewis and Goldstein, they've got history, haven't they, Mark? The last time he was reported was for Goldstein before. I do not know, and I do not understand what.
It's the weirdest thing. Jordan Lewis is a...
Oh, look, and I can stand
the
Lewis...
He's a quiet kid off the field.
Let's look at the Lewis thing.
Why does he hate North Melbourne?
I don't know. Look, he was going hard at a marking contest. I reckon for the first 75% of the journey to Goldstein, he knew he was up against a big bloke. 75% of the journey, he was looking to spoil.
And spoil the, hard above his reach.
And the other 25%... I thought he may have borrowed an old Charlie Sutton philosophy from way back.
Get in first.
Shop early.
Yeah, that's off the SMS, probably from a Hawthorn man, but quite right to ask it. I know Lewis came in late, but he was in a marking contest.
Initially.
What am I seeing wrong in this? What you're seeing wrong, yeah. Michael, is there are scores of marking contests in every AFL game. And if every player took Jordan Lewis's interpretation and license to finish that marking contest with a straight arm, it wasn't a punch, it was a sort of a straight arm follow through of the head, then we'd have more players decapitated than actually ones that have their heads on. Every player in a marking contest that doesn't quite make it and can't punch the ball has the option of... Well, accidentally just belting the guy as hard as he wants in the head. We report that and we suspend on that. It's just the way our sport works. Luke Hodge, crude would be the best description, but this SMS I think is a ripper. Guys, yes, maybe a couple of incidents went too far, but that's what makes Hawthorn Hawthorn. We intimidate, we are ruthless. It makes other clubs think, wow, how much did those tactics put the ruse off their game? Yes, we will pay a price, maybe a 2-week penalty for both. I think it brings more fear in the future and was worth doing. That's why we are so successful. It's not dissimilar to the 80s. Look, that's a very good SMS. Short-term pain for long-term gain, as Hawthorn have to live this dual life, this sort of split personality of being the most exquisite users of the ball and also, as Sydney can attest in last year's grand final, capable of mixing it inside brutally with an attack that last year made great midfielders look second rate. So how do you do both? Sometimes you step over the line, I guess, Robert.
Yeah, they have stepped over the line. The one that surprised me more was the Hodge reaction, because I think Andrew Swallow bent down to sort of pull him out of, grabbed him by the back of the jumper and pulled him off. Might have been a tackle, or it looked just to get him off, and the reaction was swift and emphatic, wasn't it? And
I mean, you know who's to blame for that. Port Adelaide. There's no way they were starting like they did the week before. If you tell Luke Hodge, if you say to Luke Hodge, look, we were tepid in the first quarter last week, then woe betide any person that pulls him off, you know, that touches his jumper in a dead ball situation. He would have been keyed in to not be tepid. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I want to talk about North's delivery into their forward line. And look, you've got to cover injuries. Everyone covers injuries. But and we haven't seen Wells play for a long time. Delsano's got a very bad injury that needed the operation. His first hamstring, or his first injury he's basically had, Mark. And
Are you saying not to rely on the return of these men in the short term at least?
Oh, I'd be interested to see whether North people out there believe that Wells is now a constant, or is he a bonus? He's certainly not a constant, given his injury history. Nick Del Santo's unlucky. But what they do provide is vision, creative, and the ability to pick the right target. And the number of times I thought that the big blokes down there offered leads and were either missed, or the directional kicking meant it bounced before they got there. North may well have been better just trying to isolate Brown at the top of the square, trying to move Gibson away. Petrie did spend a lot of time up the ground. He did lead up the ground, but I reckon the matchup that they wanted was Brown isolated, showing makers, and put it in the air a bit more than try and dissect that Hawthorn group that pushed back and helped their back line. Because that was one way. You know, Stratton on top of Black won that duel comprehensively. So to me, that was the one they had to try and organise. And I think that they weren't allowed to do that, or they weren't able to engineer that.
How, to Kevin and Raylene in a moment, your calls as well, 9429 1116. The SMS is going well on 0433 98 11 16. Every team needs to be able to do this against Hawthorn. North failed last night. Win the ball. To retain the ball in your forward 50 is key against Hawthorn, because they could, if there was a turnover in that bar behind the goals at the City End, the locker room, Hawthorn would get it all the way upfield for a shot at goal. There's no safe place to have a turnover against the Hawks. So if it does occur in your own attacking 50, you must, to be a chance of beating them, you have to bring that ball at least, you know, half the time to a dead ball situation. It can't be free transit. What could North do to change that scenario last night, because it came out too easy? What would you have done?
The pressure from the big blokes, even though I've just alluded to Petrie, Black and Brown, I don't know what I can do or what Brad Scott can do, because they are so good. You think about it. If Mitchell's tagged heavily, he will push back into the back line and be a seventh defender. I've already spoken about Isaac Smith, how they get back there. Now, Mark, if you're going to go back with them and man them up, you're going to end up with an 11-man back line.
Yeah, you can't.
With the ball being exited to the likes of Rioli, Bruce, Smith coming, and Hill. It's not going to work a one-on-one game against Hawthorn.
Not with Black in his first game. Not with Nahas, who's lively but not physical maybe enough. Not with Gibson, who's a high possession winner. But their best bet really is, I think, Ben Brown. Because he's big and dangerous, he might draw the extra player that's the outlet player. Because they use anybody as an outlet player. It's not like they rely as some teams do, on the running halfback flankers to get out of the back line. Give the ball to Gibson. Give it to Lake when he's playing. Give it to Frawley. Give it to... They're all transit players. So if you can have a key forward that draws two of them, maybe he's your link man, occupado, with other business.
Now, this is how hard it is to do. Now, we know they get beaten and they got blown out of the water in the first quarter last week. The consistency from when Hawthorn lose to me, and this explains how difficult it is when Smith and Hill are contained, not tagged, but certainly contained for the reasons you just spoken to.
Must.
And that Birchall and Burgoyne put on enormous pressure. Now, how are you going to do that? Oh.
Poison the club dinner, because it's so hard to knock over.
I've seen it happen, and because Hawthorn are so good, and we see it, that is a consistent thing. If you can,
I reckon you've got to get Smith first.
Smith first. I agree.
He is just too damaging. He can dice and slice three ways.
Yeah, and they ran around. Before you know it. It comes back to that do you tag Mitchell thing, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, who do you put the work into?
What you need is somebody who is the... How tall is...
Smith would be my height, I reckon.
6'3" in the old, something like that.
Pardon me, mate.
So he's the height of no longer a key forward, but he's tall. He's got great aerobic ability.
Bontempelli's height?
Yeah. Yeah, sort of maybe a touch shorter than... A smidge shorter than Bontempelli. He runs beautifully. He kicks beautifully. And if you think that he can't win a contested ball, then just watch Hawthorn, because he certainly can win a contested ball. Maybe not bust a pack, but one-on-one, he's skillful. So because of his kicking skills, I think you get him first and you just hope that maybe you take a risk with Hill and say that if the other players aren't getting the job done. We saw Hill last night a couple of times maybe overcommit to the run, and he certainly missed a sprayed one or two in the first quarter that he should have got.
Yeah. Interesting SMS, Mark.
Yep.
Look, Hodge and Lewis showed nasty streak under pressure. I'm not sure they were under pressure. I'm not sure.
I think they were under instructions as a team to...
Not a good example for the future of the game. Time the AFL got serious. I don't know about the future of the game. Lewis goes...
It's good for the future of the game. Whoever sent that, you know why it's good for the future of the game? Because we play a tough game. It's called Aussie rules.
Yeah, and when they step over the mark, the AFL will step in and they will both get a minimum of 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And they will miss critical games for their club.
We can't marvel at the courage of our footballers and of the what it takes to back with the ball and go... thundering into a pack. We saw last night at the end of the game this ferocious clash between, was it?
Oh, the bump, yeah.
That bump. I'm trying to think. Who's 26 for Hawthorn?
Liam Shields.
Oh, sorry, it is Liam Shields. Of course, Liam Shields.
Not the biggest man on the ground.
Liam Shields. But this game is ferocious.
A couple of the boys have gone over the top. They'll pay the penalty.
Correct.
But I tell you what, if you're asked to... If you asked to give a one-word description of Hodge and Lewis, performances in finals, performances in games, you've got to admire their courage.
Yeah.
Yesterday they snapped and they went overboard. They'll be penalised.
That is absolutely punishable, what Lewis did, and time away from the game. Absolutely.
Yep.
But also, how courageous was Goldstein to get back out on his horse and backing into packs? He took a mark only 3 minutes later. Deep in defence, backing back. No other game demands courage and receives courage like football, and part of that courage has to come from indiscriminate acts, not that we approve of, but we marvel at how players just soldier on. That's the game.
They've waited, haven't they? Yep.
Kevin's in Rosanna. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, guys. I went last night.
Yes.
And, geez, you know, if they keep putting players in cotton wool, you go back 10 years ago, and that reminds me what it was like 10 years ago. And if you wanted to face with the physical stuff, and that's what Hawthorn come last night. I'm a Kangaroo supporter, and what they delivered last night was, you know, good old-fashioned footy. And unfortunately, North Melbourne, they didn't like it. They tried to match them, but you're not going to match, you know, players like Hodge and Lewis. It was probably wrong what they did,
Oh, it is wrong. And somebody rightly points out, it's not tough. Those things are not tough. They're not tough at all. But the toughness came from the players who copped it playing on. That's the toughness. So, you know where they didn't match, what they tried to match Hawthorn with was pinpoint disposal. And as Shorey pointed out, half volleys, you know, not quite coming off the boot properly. No. That's what they really failed.
I didn't say it was a tough act. I said these two players are tough players.
Yeah, of course.
Courageous players.
Yep, they are.
So,
they are.
They'll have a rest.
What else did you make last night, Kevin, of the Hawthorn's ability to almost, with every player on the ground, deliver pinpoint disposal? Is it because Eddie had in the roof? Can we not expect that level at outdoor venues?
No, you won't get that level. If it's a dewy night, you won't get the same level. But, you know, North Melbourne just, their turnovers, I'm sick of it. You know, they're either hot or they're cold. And last night with their, you know, their disposal, their attack out of half-back, it just wasn't there. And, you know, Hawthorn win games off their half-back line. And, you know, you get players like Rioli and Hill that push up the ground, and you can't match them for speed when they've got the ball and they're on the roll. And with the amount of left footers in that team, for God's sake, you know, as a coach, you know they're only going to go one side of the ground, and that's the left-hand side every time. You know?
And, Kevin, I just looked at a stat, and I took a risk in my own mind. I just felt North Melbourne handballed a bit too much last night as compared to Hawthorn. I know Hawthorn have those beautiful skills, but were there times that North took the extra handball to try and break open the situation when really it's, I'm not saying it's disrespectful, but it wasn't practical at times. Sometimes surely just kick to a contest and see what happens up the field than try and bust it all open there and then with the extra handball. Did you feel that? I felt it watching on TV anyhow.
Yeah, they're crazy, especially down back. And, you know, the 1-2, that's fine. But the third one, I reckon it cost us 4 goals during the night just being silly down back.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it wasn't for Jack Zeeble in that third quarter, that would have been a blowout. Because Jack Zeeble in that third quarter, he stood up and his running carry out of halfback was, he was awesome.
Mm.
And if he wasn't around last night, that wouldn't have been 10 goals. That would have been 15 to 16 goals.
Yeah. I thought Tarrant did well again. That's something.
Tarrant and Roughhead.
Yeah, I thought Tarrant, he looks like the right man for the bigger forwards in the game, Kevin. That's a big plus, I think.
You going, Kev?
Kevin, do you agree with that? Because North have always had this plethora of defenders that are an inch and a bit too small, but Tarrant looks like the right man if he can stay physically able.
No, he, you know, up forward he didn't have it, but geez, down back, he's got the skills to be, you know, just a backman full time. And his game last week was pretty awesome against Geelong. Like, he was just amongst it. You know, what did he have, 12 or 13 marks? And he read the play really well down back. He played really well.
Thanks a lot for the call, Kevin.
Apparently, they're not missing critical games. They're playing Melbourne and GWS.
Be bloody critical if they lose one of them.
Yeah, and I'm the point that they're all critical games when you're fighting for a top four. But yeah, we can understand that they'll most likely win those games. But that's alluding to the fact that they did that deliberately. No,
they play Sydney after that. Hawthorn supporters have unilaterally given them 2 weeks each. I don't know whether the match review. I don't know whether the match review panel will be as gentle. Certainly not on Lewis. But anyhow, it's totally up to the match review panel, and Hawthorn, I think, can cover decent players. That's not the issue. The issue is whether or not these players took a message out there to be more intense as compared to last week's first quarter, and the two guys that completely overcooked the message were two of the most experienced players on the park.
There's no doubt in my mind that after the week before, Clarkson and the match committee and the coaches had them built up to be right on the edge and to go right at North.
Yep.
And good on them for doing it. Not good on the two incidents, but good on the way they played the game and what they did to North Melbourne.
Raylene is in Thornbury. Good morning, Raylene.
Yeah, good morning. How are you going there? I'd just like to make a comment about how you appear to be condoning the violence that Alistair Clarkson has encouraged his players to put across the field last night.
Right.
Luke Hodge is the leader of that club. He's the captain, right?
Yep.
And he gets up off the ground and hits someone in the throat, right? He could have crushed his hyoid bone. He could have killed him.
Did he?
They're all very strong.
Raylan, did he? I've got to ask you.
It was good luck rather than good management. It was a violent act on the field, and if you did it out in the street, you would be charged with assault.
Yep. You know what? I've got to say this. He didn't actually crush his thyroid bone, and he didn't kill him. And I've got to ask this question. We've had some spectacular marks this year. Some of them players, like Elliot, quite out of control on landing. It's probably fortunate that they didn't break any vertebrae and are now in a state of permanent paralysis, like quadriplegia. It's fortunate, isn't it, that none of our high marks have ended up in permanent injury, Raylene?
You have the opportunity to talk all day. I've got a couple of minutes to give you feedback of what I think is Alistair Clarkson's coaching is too aggressive. I admire the skills of the Hawthorn Football Club. They don't need to actually hurt the opponent. They look like they attempt to hurt the opponent. And last night, because they lost last week, they've been told to go out there and don't take a backward step. Now, I take it as a physical game, but those two incidents were completely untenable and they're actually assault and battery.
But
so
didn't we say that? We said that.
Alistair Clarkson, and don't... But you're going, this is, you know... There's a message sent out. What was the comment you used? You used the comment.
I said that there would have been a message sent out.
It's an early... No, you said it's a small-term pain for long-term gain because now everybody knows what they can do.
No, I read out an SMS, Raylene.
That was an SMS from a...
No, I didn't say that. I gave somebody the right to SMS as... I'm not cutting you off. You can absolutely... And you've made a case, but... Didn't we finish off by saying, just in defence maybe of the interpretation of what we said, didn't I say at the very end that they went out with a message not to have, it appears, that tepid and non-engaged start that they had against Port Adelaide, and it's very disappointing that the two players that overcooked that message and find themselves with likely state stints on the sideline are the two of the most experienced players. I think that's very disappointing that the two players that absolutely should know the measure of what is a more intense but legal response are Hodge and Lewis, and I think that's very disappointing.
Yeah. So, as I say, nothing to take away from the obvious skills of this club, but they've really got to think about the consequences of their actions, and that's the message that I wish to get across. And thank you for taking me today.
And Raylene, I wasn't being glib in my interpretation, my example of saying a high mark could result. It definitely could result in serious injury. This game is played by courageous young men, not only just at AFL level, at all levels, in the full knowledge that they are not protected. Like many other sports, team sports are. This game was created long before the notions of what you are probably rightly mentioning are the absolute constant dangers of a 360-degree high-contact sport. And it's hearts-in-mouth stuff. Now, when a player strikes another player, as you said, it takes that even a step further, which is why those players will be suspended. But I think we could drive ourselves crazy with what-ifs on the footy field. I umpired yesterday amateurs D1 reserves, and I marvel at the courage of these kids and blokes playing for nothing. So I'm just saying that if we what-ifed the game of Aussie rules, you wouldn't watch it. It's a bloody dangerous game, Raylene.
Yes, I know that. So, okay, but thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Raylene.
And that's why those players will get suspended, because it's dangerous enough without throwing punctures and elbows. But you can what if so much of Australian rules footy. Thankfully, we've had a very good run. We really have at the top level. Spare the tragedy of Neil Saxey. We have had a very good run, but certainly at local level, there are yearly reminders of life-changing injuries to the dangers that are football, that are on a football field, and it's why I admire all footballers, no matter what the level. Just in closing, North Melbourne, are there any changes you would make with the available stock? Do they need to rejig the back line at all in terms of...
Well,
and that forward line, can it be sturdier?
I think you've touched on a point where you were, and we're both very happy with Tarrant and the way he's progressing. Thompson seems to not be the player that he once was when he was the permanent fullback. He's been moved around. He is a versatile player. He can play in small and tall. I just don't know whether they've got the mix there. Their halfback flankers, Jacobs, who found himself on Rioli, and young McMillan, who we had in here on Monday night playing his first game. I thought they're under extreme pressure about the way the ball came in. They're going to put weight back into that side for Black. They've got to keep going with Brown, got to keep going with Petrie. Their rucks are strong.
Does Black not deserve a better run? Because otherwise he'll just not be a North player next year. And this is a guy that was...
We had an opportunity.
This was a guy that was given a long-term contract on it 2 years ago because he was so good. If they drop him after a game, he'll never... He won't play for them.
He was a late replacement for Waite, and the preferred forward line is Brown, Petrie, Waite.
Yeah, that makes it hard for Aaron Black. Somebody will pick him up, lick their lips at the prospect. He seems to be a better hunt than, say, a Liam Jones, but that's maybe in hindsight. So, Hawthorn it was. I don't think North were disgraced, but if they want to play with the big boys, they've got to wear their big boys' pants and they've got to fit. And last night it just didn't quite fit. After the break, it was 0-0. Now in boxing, when the O has to go, it's a clash of the undefeated Titans, the champions. Not quite what we've got this afternoon, but close. But when the O had to go last night in Queensland, it was between the two beleaguered sides in the competition. And one of them today are a head-scratching bottom of the ladder with no wins. Brisbane versus Gold Coast after the break. If you're a Brisbane fan, I'd go get some wadding and stick it in your ears because this ain't going to be kind.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merholm, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better.
Prior to the break, we were discussing the very present dangers that are part of Australian rules football, being a 360-degree contact sport, high speed, and I made mention of the fact that we've been very fortunate at the highest level here in Victoria and then the national competition to have had one very serious incident of quadriplegia with Neil Saxey, but beyond that, serious injuries. I made those comments and I also said that at local level, we have yearly reminders of how dangerous the game is. And I made those comments unaware that there has been a tragic incident occur yesterday in local football in the third tier of local football in the Geelong and Bellarine Peninsula area in the Barwon League. And our deepest sympathies go out to the family of Aaron Marnie. Aaron Marnie yesterday was playing in a match between Lawn and Otway, and he was tackled legally. There was he ran into an outstretched arm, and sadly, tragically, his heart went into arrest. And despite the very best efforts of a raft of medically qualified people who were at the ground either watching the game or came to the ground after being notified of the emergency, tragically this father of two young children has passed away. And so to the family, these discussions that we have, of course, are done on the run and very much open to discussion as to what we were discussing previously. But now being made aware of this tragic incident, I would say that I wouldn't have brought up the issue out of respect and courtesy to the family of Aaron Marnie. So I do apologise if any people listening to that discussion were further grief-stricken by it being part of our morning program. To the family of Aaron Marnie, to both football clubs who are playing, particularly Otway Districts, of whom Aaron Mahoney was a very fine footballer. The SEN football team and football family, including all of our listeners, extend our deepest sympathy. This is, as I said, a dangerous game. And to claim a young life and a young father is a perspective that we have to keep in mind. Way too big a price, a true tragedy. So let's now have a look at a game between the two beleaguered teams from Queensland, or as I prefer to call it, the end of the Q clash.
Inside Football, the Gold Coast Suns. The Brisbane Lions.
Kolodziejczyk with the ball, goes to the left boot, he pumps it inside 50, Dixon, he's there, he's got it! So Dixon from 15 metres out, directly in front, just goes bang through the middle for number 6.
Across the board, I thought the leadership was terrific, I thought the referee was fantastic. We had sometimes two and sometimes three players who couldn't come back on, so we obviously fatigued and cramped a little bit at the end, but I thought they started to show some smartness around. We outscored them again in the last quarter, even with players down. So I think full credit to them, but I've just spoken to the players again. That's only 1 week. Now we just, whether we win or lose, we've got to have that as a baseline. I keep saying that, and then we can start coaching the other stuff.
It must have been a relieved Rodney Eade to record his first victory as a senior coach with the Gold Coast Suns, who won 18-10. 118 to 712, 54. For Brisbane, it is a horrific start to the season. The notion that this team that finished the year off well last year, Shorey, showed promise. We know that, of course, they had key tall issues down back and front, but so good was their apparent growing midfield that when you just did the sums. Who didn't do the sums? You add Dane Beams, you add Alan Christensen, you add Mitch Robinson, you get back the injured Rich, you get back the injured Leuenberger. How could
you
this...
You get back Redden.
Redden, how could this team in 2015...
I'm not sure, Mark. It's a very good
have
point.
...have started 0-5. You've got the same coach who was so impressive last year in wins and losses. You've cleared out the players the previous year that didn't want to be at the club. Everybody's on message. Brisbane go from being a club that people want to jump off to a club that people want to jump in. Everything smells rosy and the performances are, you know, stink to high heaven. Is this a five-week oddity, a five-week off-the-radar occurrence, or is this what Brisbane is? Because if this is what Brisbane is, then she's got problems.
Well, yesterday you had Redden with 33, you had Beams 31 and Rich 22. So, look, Mark, it's both ends of the ground. We don't know the Leuenberger situation, but surely to goodness, they have clearly made a decision, Leuenberger. I don't know enough about him, and I should. I know he's going to move probably and be a very good ruckman. But can he play forward? They haven't got any strength.
You know the bloke that replaced him? If he didn't play, they would have lost by 100. Stephen Martin could get Brownlow votes. He played really well, Martin.
Well, they're preferring him over Leuenberger, but that's also saying that Leuenberger can't play forward. Now, you made a very good point, Mark, and it's something for a discussion, probably not on this show, on maybe our Monday night. You know, sometimes the grass is always greener. We know Robbo had no say in it, right? Because he was delisted by Carlton. Alan Christensen made a decision, right, his own personal decision. Beams made a decision. And another bloke connected with that game yesterday, although he didn't play, Nick Malcheski made a decision.
Yep.
Sometimes leaving, and we'll talk about this Monday night, I reckon, sometimes leaving the comfort and the security of your local environment and your local club doesn't mean, you know, if you look at Christensen, Beams and Malcheski and Robertson, and you put them all in together, forget their individual reasons and for going, you know, would you give them a pass out of 10 for their combined years, Mark? You'd be struggling, wouldn't you? Christensen's had 25 yesterday, but he doesn't appear to be the player he was at Geelong. Malcheski's been well documented.
Yeah, Malcheski's the concern.
Robbo's struggling, fighting hard but struggling, yeah. And Beams has played good football.
Yeah.
But not sure at the level that he played with the Pies.
He doesn't have that zest for the finish with a beautiful goal. It's all a bit bad luck at the moment. I'm sure when they play better he'll lift, but I think he's getting a sense of, I've got to go down, you know, this forward line ain't something I really want to kick the ball to. I always use the golf analogy.
Yeah.
If you can putt brilliantly, it takes pressure off your iron shots because you can hit it into the heart of the green.
So you're saying if you can mark it up forward, it takes pressure
off the kicks.
Off the kicks or off the rebound.
Because you can just, as an outlet, kick it up to a contest and you've got Brown there and you've got forwards that can make a 50-50 contest and even win a 30-70. But when you don't have any key forwards, it's like not being able to putt. You're attacking the flag. You've got to hit medium-sized players on bosom. And that's hard. It's certainly not working. At the other end of the ground, Goose Maguire's now played and been dropped. This brave soldier's no longer in their team. So they go with Paparone. Now, Paparone started as a forward. He was on a wing. I think he might end up as what he sounds like, maybe a pasta dish, because he doesn't look like a footballer to me. He completely misinterpreted the notion of being a backman on a number of occasions yesterday in greasy conditions. He's trying to take pack marks. That was almost silly in the forward line. You'd be better off sort of punching it to advantage. But to do it in the back line, he was just gifting opportunities to players, and once it's sort of the conditions were better handled by the Gold Coast players, they were just outmarking the other guy. I don't know which name goes first. Andrews Harris sounds like a department store to me. The kid could be all right. He's as raw as steak tartare. And they're better than the McStay's. Got a long way to go.
I like Gardner.
Gardner's okay.
But, Mike, you made the point. I can read out some names. Green came on last year. Taylor was well documented.
Oh, Taylor got hurt a bit last night.
Clay Beams, you know, got his brother back. Rowan Buick came on last year. They've got Christian and they got Rich back. Golby's back in the side, right? They got Robbo. Zorko.
Zorko's not going great.
Is he the player he was last year?
It's not working for them. They need a win. Last year they started poorly and they just snuck one over St Kilda and it started parlaying.
It's hard to talk about.
This team needs to believe in itself. I'll say one thing about a Gold Coast player. I think Jack Martin, on what I saw last night, is going to be a superstar, or he likes playing against crappy opposition. Because if that's Jack Martin, you want Jack Martin in your team. The problem is, you don't play Brisbane every week, Jack. We'll see. If he can do that again, the kid's got... Oh, has he got tricks and speed? He's a beauty. Let's go to the news, and when we come back, we'll get the Max Review panel first opinions from the Herald Sun's John Ralph.
On 11.16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
We have got to love football on a Sunday on 11.16 SEN. You get two games. Big pre-game today with Matthew Boyd of the Western Bulldogs, a special guest. These doggies. These precocious pups, and can't teach an old dog new tricks. Hasn't Bevo taught Matthew Boyd a new trick or two playing off the half-back line? Robert Murphy should be... There should be an inquiry into why somebody, in the pressure of a ferocious game, as was yesterday at the SCG in driving rain, why he was allowed to have his own dry ball and dry parts of the ground... When everybody's slipping over, he's bouncing it and hitting players 40 metres. Oh, what an effort. And Sydney need to be admired as well, fighting back in those conditions. It was a cracking game befitting of top teams. We know Sydney is. We ask, are we seeing Port Adelaide again? Are we seeing a team that we thought were irrelevant become relevant before our eyes? We'll talk about that game shortly, but first head to the offices of the Herald Sun, where John Ralph, a big part of this station, has and his crew a lot of work because there's a lot to discuss, especially from last night's games. Good morning to you, Johnny Ralph.
Hello, boys. Yeah, we have to sift through the wreckage of the rumble in the jungle. We haven't had a heap of tribunal cases this year, obviously Chris Yaron and a couple of other ones, but nothing really like this in regards to a couple of high-profile hawks. I wouldn't be surprised if Hodgie goes straight to the tribunal, just because the elbow to the throat slash neck of Swallow was a pretty, let's face it, was a pretty low act. As he said himself, it was a brain fade. And all that would have to be intentional and maybe a medium or a high contact for him to be pushed through. But the tribunal these days doesn't mean you get 6 weeks. It just means that you can get what Chris Yaron got, which was 3 weeks. And look, I think we would all feel like it was comparable. You know, elbows have such a capacity to injure of someone seriously. And so,
well said, John, because it would take away the discount portion of good records, early pleas, at taking the judgment early, etc., which he should not be afforded the luxury of.
No, I couldn't agree more. And look, if he got a three-week penalty, look, I think even Luke Hodge himself would say, look, I think that's about right. It was a pretty ordinary act from a pure ball player, but you still need to accept the repercussions. I think it's a bit more confusing for Jordan Lewis for that swinging, I suppose you call it a forearm. It reminded me a fair bit of Jason McCartney, of course, who missed the grand final for a very similar act. Now, this one was on Goldstein. Goldstein played on. He was a bit dazed and confused, but no real concussion. And so, but there is a chance they would consider that to be careless and only medium impact. Now, that would still get him 2 weeks down to one. I don't know. I mean, what do we think? Do we feel that would be a little bit light? Maybe they might adjust the ratings and give him 3 weeks down to two, which is probably a fair penalty in itself.
Sometimes I think first viewing is best on these things. You can watch a million replays in super slow-mo and start to get befuddled by it. I'll ask Shorey, when you saw it, what did you think?
Lewis?
Yes.
Yeah, I've summed it up. I thought 75% he made his way to contest fiercely for the ball, and then I think he's just gone, the last 25%, he's gone right through it and said, well...
But when you saw it, if did you think, oh, that's...
I said 2 weeks.
Yeah. When I saw it, I thought three. I thought that's...
I thought
you don't do stuff like that. You're gone. Yeah. What did you think, Ralphie?
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, and yeah, I think also another litmus test is to listen to the past players who are commentators. And look, obviously a lot of those guys can tend to minimise an incident. But they said, oh, no, this is an act that's going to get him in trouble. And, you know, they're the guys that have been out there.
Yep.
They know that Jordan Lewis could have pulled out that incident, could have buffeted for contact. And instead he said, no, I'm going to go through with this. Jordan Lewis hasn't made a mistake for 2 years on the football field. He knows what he's doing. And so, again, if 2 weeks was the penalty, I think we'd accept that from down from three. The other little test case is going to be Stephen May.
Just on that, also not a bad one for the AFL to send a message, and that is we have many incidents in every game, right, not just at AFL level, everywhere, where players are in marking contests, and if they swung the arm, we'd have those things. There is, even though it's done at high pace and impulsively, there is always the option to show some care when you're not in the marking contest. Now, he has to cop three.
No, that's a great point. Yeah, the May one on Rockcliffe, which of course saw him concussed, but not with a broken jaw. He did have scans at hospital and he has been cleared of a broken jaw. He's due a little bit of luck. Now, that last year would have seen May definitely suspended. You make contact to the head, it means that you're responsible. But now they've got about six different clauses. You know, would you have accepted contact? You know, was it in a football incident? Did you go past the ball? And I think we'd all feel like it was a really rugged, aggressive football incident, but it's two blokes going for it. Rockcliffe would expect to be buffeted there. I'd like to see him cleared there, but, you know, there was no wiggle room at all last year, and well done to the AFL to actually allowing a few shades of grey.
No, I agree on that. And when you say your reaction, as Mark asked me about the first time, I thought given that John, where you said last year, no grey area. Like, they're both heading in the same direction. They both came together. One man is bigger than the other. I've got no doubt that May and Rockliffe came together in a genuine contest for the ball, going the same way. And
to me, it was a classic old-fashioned straight up and down the middle shirt front.
That, well, side to side, mate.
Yeah, but oh, he got him. I think he was able to get him down the middle a bit, and it reminded me of Steve Wallace on Trevor Barker. Had this been 35 years ago, he wouldn't have been reported, and basically, Rockliffe would have been given the Epsom salts and told to get back out on the field. So we don't have that situation now, quite rightly, and the modern. I don't think he can get. He's got to get suspended for this one. He's got to get a week or whatever he's.
Do you think so? Yeah. Stephen May.
Yeah, he does. I think he does.
All right.
I'm
with you a bit, Ralphie.
I still just think it's a football incident where they're both going. You know, it wasn't Kajic getting hit by Jan Siracusa. It was those blokes going in a general line for the ball. So, yeah, we'll wait and see on Monday, are they?
Right up.
James Kelly has the very painful sounding. And it ain't just painful sounding. They tell me it is painful, ruptured testicle.
No, it must be immensely painful. I knew we had to talk about this, but I haven't spoken to the doctors yet. So I went to my mate, Dr. Google, and there were lots of squeamish sounding descriptions, portions and dislocations and ruptures and all those kind of things. So, look, all we can say at the moment is that, yeah, he would be in immense pain. It would be very much a pain thing in terms of management when he gets back. And when you think he's out for a couple of weeks, I'll try to speak to Stephen Hocking, who, of course, has had this incident himself in the 89 grand final today. So we'll try and keep you updated through the afternoon. But, another player down who has been, well, he's had some good patches of form, and they just need their leaders to shine as they did late yesterday.
Is it true that Mitch Clark was an ultra-cautious, interpretation of that very serious foot injury from last season? Could he play next week, basically?
Yeah, that's what Chris Scott says. He says that he's likely to play. It's Collingwood on Friday night, isn't it? So, look, he said it was the other foot. But, of course, you know, whenever you he had a Lisfranc fracture. So whenever you have any foot pain as a player who's gone through that, you just give them that extra week. So the good news is that he should be back. I found a player in Walker and Kirsten, you know, did some things last week. So at least they've got some options there for their attacking arsenal.
Josh Kennedy probably could have kicked more goals, actually, but he's stormed to a 6-goal lead on the Coleman medal, and he should be right for next week as well. No problem.
No, you're right. Yeah, came out, snagged that elbow, looked in strife, patched it up. Every time he kicked the goal, he sort of grabbed at the elbow, but yeah, he was in fantastic form, so no problems for him either.
Bad news for the D's today.
Yeah, Chris Dawes is out with a bit of a calf strain. Look, Jesse Hogan could do it all, can't he? Or so we believe. But he does need a foil in Chris Dawes. And look, it's Jack Watts' 100th game, so Jack Watts will have to lift too. I didn't have on the list there that I probably should have. Just Seb Tape buckled that knee. Now, we know he's had an ACL in 2012 that took a long time to come back from. So a few ankles and sprains and calves from that Gold Coast game. But I think Seb Tape potentially might be the worst. He had ice on it. No news yet on scan, so we cross our fingers for a bloke who's already been really unlucky with his own knee issues.
I'll just ask you, as I asked Shorey, their two best players arguably last night were Harley Bennell and Jack Martin. Should Gold Coast be rejoicing at that form turnaround or scratching their heads and saying, oh, so when it's easy, you boys can play good footy?
Oh, yeah, a little from column A, a little from column B. But all Rodney E wants is for his players to buy in, not just the physical players, not just the Richitellis and the Stanleys and the guys who should. You know, he wants those guys who need to be leaders. Charlie Dixon was fantastic too. But he wasn't fit last week. They just said, we think that a half-fit Dixon is better than a full-fit Gorringe. And they played him. And then, of course, we saw we saw what happened this week as well. Look, I think he'll sign too. Like I said on Twitter last night, Brisbane really keen to have a crack at Dixon. Feel like they'd throw big money at him, but he was the first player that was actually ever selected by Gold Coast. So if you're a Gold Coast fan, you should sleep soundly to know that he does want to stay at the club.
I tell you who wouldn't be sleeping soundly at the moment is Will Minson. If Leuenberger comes on the market and Minson doesn't get back in the side and he wants to get on the market as well, there's not that many teams that have a spot for a big first ruckman, and we'll see. He's gone from all Australian in a year and a bit to not being in an AFL team.
It's amazing, isn't it? He is contracted for one more year. I don't even know how many hit-outs Cordy had because, look, he only put the top two hit-outs in, and even the fullback in Ruffhead had more hit-outs than him. Pike had a million. But they seem to... There's something they like about Cordy. So, you know, whether Will gets back, you're right. They'd be on the lookout for a ruckman, and imagine that ruckman's first port of call. Okay, you get to hit the ball to Tom Liberatore, who comes back, and that midfield. Yeah, you'd like to be a ruckman in that Western Bulldogs team.
When the Doggies weren't given any chance of making the finals, you would say maybe Ace Cordy should play out the season as the future of the Bulldogs ruck stocks. But now, because they're 4-1, they want Minson back in the best of possible form and fight it out. Best man wins, I think.
Yeah, well, I thought he was okay, Cordy, last week. Jacobs didn't get on top of him. He kicked an early goal when Jacobs probably should have been paid a mark. But I think we all saw last night, or yesterday, didn't we, that if a bloke is getting record numbers of hit-outs against you, sooner or later, that's going to hurt your midfield, even if they do shark the opposition ruckman.
Yeah, yesterday they both had the same amount of possessions, very low. Cordy had 2 and 3 for 5, and Pike had 2 and 6. I don't know the significance of hit-outs, hit-outs to advantage and all that, but Pike's had 59 to Cordy 7.
And but well, there you go. Some of those 59 have to be to advantage, don't they?
Yeah. And also very interesting...
There'd want to be 7 good hit-outs to advantage for 7.
Yeah, you'd want it. Also, very interesting at Etihad Stadium last night. The goal review has entered a new phase of utter embarrassment and basically derision as the ball hit the post and it was paid a goal. What's going on now?
Well, I don't know what you need. I mean, the behind-the-goals angle wasn't a definitive, but I think we all felt that the Isaac Smith shot that did hit the post, it felt like a diverted, it felt like the ball spun, as Brian Taylor said. Surely that's enough. Like, I really feel like you need overwhelming evidence to overturn a decision. But didn't we have it? I don't know. We've gone backwards. We've had a couple of really befuddling goal review decisions in the last couple of weeks.
You've got nutters running in and saying what they think happened. And when I say nutters, I mean boundary umpires. There was one where the ball hit the goal umpire and he ran in and he goes, it hit the post!
Oh, exactly. So, although at least we got the right decision.
Yeah, but
the craziest decision ever with, who was it, Eddie Betts, when he kicked the ball right into the bloke in the NAB Cup and it bounced back and they said, no, it's all good. At least they changed the rules.
Yeah, no, that was good. That was
good. At least we got the right decision there.
Ralphie, enjoy your Sunday because me thinks it's going to be a very busy sports section in the Herald Sun and whenever you're on SEN over the next few days. Plenty to discuss.
Thanks again, boys.
Great stuff. John Ralph there from the Herald Sun. Crown Bet odds for today's game. Melbourne, $5.20. That starts to factor in, no doors. Fremantle, $1.16. The line is, why is it $1.92 at 32.5 points start for the Ds. St Kilda, $6.50. Essendon, $1.12. The line's $1.92. 39.5 points start for Essendon. They could get gobbled up very quickly. Or St Kilda could start well again. And last year, that resulted in a loss for Essendon because they never quite got onto their tucker. I don't think it's going to happen today, folks. Adelaide, $2.30. Port Adelaide, $1.62. Showdown, 39 or 38. 38, I think it is. The line's at 7.5. And that is the start that Adelaide will get over Port Adelaide, who are favoured. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we go up to the Harbour City. And there were no harbour views yesterday because the clouds rolled in. The rain came down in the second half, and it was an old-fashioned, absolute dogfight. And that's what it was. A dogfight won by the Doggies. Spider Lee cannot contain himself. So when we come back, Doggies fans, woof woof.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. The Sydney Swans. The Western Bulldogs.
back towards the goal square. It's a big pack of players. Boyd was a tackler. Taken away by Delhouse. Quick snap. It's bouncing. Bouncing. And then Eastern Waters, he kicked it out of midair. I think he has.
The game was in the balance all day. And you couldn't really take a breath, you know, tactically. And the players and their efforts were just enormous. You know, we know we're playing against, you know, such a great side in Sydney, and they've been outstanding for a long period of time. So we knew that it was a big challenge, and, to endure that struggle today will give us a hell of a lot of belief going into the future.
How could they do it? How could this young Bulldogs team go up there and against the battle-hardened runners-up and premiers from the previous three seasons ago, so a couple of years previous, how could they match them physically in what became this titanic arm wrestle throughout the last quarter? It happened, and we're going to find from Robert Shaw in a moment how that was able to occur. But the final scores in what was a great game to watch as well, don't sell Sydney short, there were desperate acts from both sides, saw the Doggies get up 11-11-77 to 10-13-73 in front of 25,541 passionate, angry, and I guess a little misinformed Sydney supporters who felt that they were going to get this miracle result on the back of a Mike Pike mark in the centre of the ground in the dying seconds, and then a tackle by Johannesson that they thought deserved 50. It actually was touched off the boot and play on. And whilst that is indisputable, what they also don't fathom is, I think, the fact that had it not been called touch and play on, Johannesson never would have run up to a player who took a mark and tackled him. So the cry was, it was a mark and 50 that we were denied. No, it was a mark that was denied with the touched off the boot. Don't think Johannesson would have gone and tackled him had there not been such a call clearly made by the nearest umpire. I just, before we hand over to Shorey for the analysis, there were some heroes in that last quarter for the Dogs. Robert Murphy and his dry ball audacity needs to be seen to be believed. Liam Picken, not a historically possession-rich footballer, found ball after ball in difficult circumstances. Bontempelli got ball, and he also moved it forward by whatever means, including standing up in tackles and handballing it to advantage. When others couldn't even pick it up, he stood up and disposed of it under immense pressure. And I'm going to ask a question, and please, I'd love to get some SMS responses from Doggies fans. There was a final moment of heroism, a last roll of the dice, with 10 or 8 seconds remaining on the clock. Jetta gets the ball to McVeigh and he kicks it into a vacant forward 50. As their screens showed that there was nobody there, every Doggies fans would have been enormously alarmed. They would have hoped that that kick would have gone to a loose man back, but no, every player had pressed into the Bulldogs half, 36 players all there. So the gallop was on. The kick from McVeigh was picked up one-handed by a Doggy at full pace running the wrong way under enormous pressure from two pursuing Swans. He picked it up and he handballed it to Johannesson and to ultimate safety as the siren went. Now, it was very hard to pick up on TV who that player was. We now know who it was, but I wonder how many people actually know who that last gasp hero was. It was a bit of a, not a murder mystery, but a win mystery. So please, as we discuss the game, and we need them through quickly because we don't want you to go back and check, just from your memory, who performed that last second heroic?
No checking.
You might know, because actually, brilliantly, on radio, Kevin Bartlett identified the person, but on TV, Hutto found it in the moment. He probably picked up the player a little bit later. He found it more difficult, or at least it wasn't part of his call. So I wonder whether everybody knows who it was or whether it would, there's a cross-section. At the moment, people are getting it right. Shorey, the analysis.
Well, let's look at the losers in the moment and what the Dogs were up against and what they had to do. Because sometimes you look at the end stats and you look at Franklin with 3, Goods with 2, Hanbury played a superb game, 37, Their number one ruckman had 59 hitouts. They finally brought in Mitchell. We'll never know why he doesn't play, but he's come in and had 30. So on those very simple stats, you would have to say that Sydney have ticked every box. But the box they didn't tick or didn't consider was the opposition. And this has been a superb story. They are now sitting 4-1 on the ladder. And we've just got to look at, so not so much the game, but how have they done it? And I'll just start with some few examples. The reinvention of Matthew Boyd to halfback. Can we call Pickin a reinvented player from a dour, negative tactic to now tactic with him, run with the opposition best midfielder?
He started forward.
He started mid. He can go back. And now he's becoming a most productive player.
Oh, yes.
Not scared to make big decisions. You go up there in the wet against Pike and these blokes. The first bloke you take's Minson. No, it's not. You're going to go with Ace Cordy. And in the end, he had to take Cordy off, rough it into the ruck, and I just reckon it left him a little bit. That's the first time they look vulnerable. So they've still got to address that ruck situation. But what it did do, it also introduced Rovat onto the game, who had 8 possessions and was significant in the last quarter.
Yeah, yes, definitely. You know, so.
He hasn't been frightened to play a boy first year out of school in Lucas Webb. There's a classy player. He's got Eastern Wood, touch wood for wood, with those hamstrings. Developing to a very, very good player and showing the fulfilling the potential we always had. The constant menace of the forward line dynamics, which is very difficult to play on 6 foot oneers, Stringer, Cromery, Dixon can get you. They've got the presence of Boyd, who hasn't set the world on light, but he gives them structure and he gives them a target and he can help out in the ruck. And then at ground level, you know. So this going on, everything we've spoken about, was a surprise victory. There's no doubt about that. But you come to understand the influence of the coach, the way he set up his side, the faith he's given in the likes of Lin Jong, Honeychurch, these sort of blokes. And then you throw in what I would consider the icing on the cake is the emergence of Bontempelli as a legitimate 6'3". Mark, you summed it up. You know, the knock on him as a young kid was his physicality or lack of. No one can question that now. He's a terrific inside player because he puts his head over the ball. He's got great technique. You don't have to be a knock him down, tough inside. You've got to have strong technique when you be an inside player. So he's got clean hands when he picks it up. He knows, as you said, how to extricate himself from a tackle, lift his arms up and get the ball going. And if he does find space through a stoppage, his run and pace and delivery is decisive. Now, this is no doubt in my mind from what I've watched and seen, this is a Beveridge-built team. Because of the moves that he has made, the risks he's taken, the players he's introduced and the confidence he's given them as a team. And when you start to be rewarded for what they've done, the way they've trained and the way he's set up the team, you're going to get these type of victories. And I'm not going to take anything away from them because they've been superb. Can they maintain it through rounds 12 to 15? I hope so, but that'll be the query on the Western Bulldogs. Remember, they lost their best player. And I don't include Griffin and Kearney as their best player.
No, they lost Libba.
They lost Liberatore.
And they've had this win without Wallace and Morris.
And Wallace was really, really improving.
Well. Yeah, going really, really well. In that Liberatore role.
So he's just given them this belief that, like, and he came from Hawthorn, and he's listened to Clarkson, and he's had the same sort of thing. Well, Morris is out. Well, Fletcher Roberts, you're in. You got to do the job. Libba's out, so I'll give Lin Jong more midfield time. Away you go, son. You know, no excuses. I know it's the old cliche. Lose a soldier, find a one. That's what he got from Hawthorn, and I believe that's the way he's coaching, and they've certainly embraced it to the point where Robert Murphy, in 200 and whatever games, Mark, yes, not only did he bring his own patch of grass and his own Sharon, But he also said that there was the Western Bulldogs' best win that he's ever been in.
I'd say that. I mean, that, given his extensive time at the club, that is quite some, you know, statement. They won finals. They got into preliminary finals. No. Question time for Sydney. Enough's enough. If I was a Sydney fan, I'm not, but I'm a journalist. Sit down and work out what you're doing with your tools. Sam Reid didn't play yesterday. Goods was quite good.
No, Reid was good the week before.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. Down back. But Tippett gets sort of frozen out. Yes, it's pouring wet. But football can't be managed to be perfect in condition for your tools. And it failed dismally when it mattered on grand final day last year. So are they just going to continue to hope the conditions are right and the players get off to good starts and it clicks? Because those talls, Reid, who didn't play yesterday, I know, Tippett and Franklin, especially with goods around, but even without goods around, they need to click into form in a particular game and they're devastating. But surely a very good team like Sydney isn't hanging around for players to click into form. They need something that's foolproof and safe. Now, if Sam Reid plays back, does that mean Richards and Grundy, one of them, don't play? Because their backline is always structured up with those two key players. There are teams where Sam Reid could play the third tall back.
And he can play as a pinch hit runner. He can go forward. I think the unfortunately he got injured, or he pulled out of the side.
But if he goes forward, then Tippett just won't get the ball.
Starting to find some consistency at either end of the ground.
That's fine. But if he becomes consistent up forward, Tippett will become irrelevant. They'll go to Franklin, kick long, and Reid and Tippett. It needs to just. It has. It did in, I think, the final. Maybe not. Did they beat Adelaide in the finals last year?
Sydney.
Yeah, I'll check. There was one week it worked really well. Is that where Sydney's at? That there are weeks that this works really well?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Look at the quality.
You need to have a safer bet than that. I don't see the Hawthorn dynamic having the click. It just works. It works because it's versatile. It's got mid-sized, you know, Bruce and Gunston are versatile type players and they don't get in each other's way. I just have this constant nagging doubt when I see Reid, Tippett, Franklin.
Goods.
Definitely when Goods is added to their mix, I have this niggling doubt that good work can be undone because they're just not simpatico on a single afternoon. If they're out of alignment, then it just doesn't work. And they're a better team than relying on.
You're talking about alignment, Mark, and off the SMS, malcontent. Yeah, righto, Mal.
That's a nickname the Ox would have given him.
He played wing. He played a little bit of ruck rover. So your point's quite right. They are, and with Goods back in the mix, there was a reason Goods was left out, and that was purely team balance, Mark.
Yeah.
Purely team balance, a little bit of lack of...
Interesting.
So that'll be interesting. Also off the SMS, they've picked it up pretty well. Sydney in the wet, nothing against the Bulldogs. But do you think of that exhilarating performance against Port Adelaide or at the Adelaide Oval? Pace, run, spread. Because of that, they need a dry track.
Yeah, it's surprising.
They need a dry
Not surprisingly. I mean, talented midfielders like dry better. But you would have thought that perfectly built for wet weather football are Kennedy and Jack.
It's a fallacy now.
I'm saying they're not. They don't go as well in the wet. We need to go to the break, but we asked that question, who was the last gasp hero for the Doggies? And we got a good range of answers. We got Rovat, Talia,
no.
East. No, well, we're going to play the audio.
All
so
right,
this is sort of a fun way to answer it. So we had Talia, Rovat, they were no's. Probably on looks you knew they were no's. We've had Lucas Webb nominated.
Yeah.
We had Easton Wood nominated. We had Matthew Boyd nominated. He'll be part of the pre-game chat today on 11:16 SEN, ahead of Sunday afternoon football. We had, now this is interesting, some wag out there sending Herb Henderson. It was not Herb Henderson. Let's have a listen to this last play's called brilliantly by Matty G and KB And it was heroics, because if this bloke would have fumbled, then it would have been door open for a highway robbery, theft of the sanctuary. It turned out that there wasn't a theft mystery. Let's find out who saved the day as we go to the break.
The Swans clear it. McVay takes it half back.
They've got 20 seconds. He's going to kick the ball long. The race is on. The ball's getting inside 50. They're all running hard. Eastern Wood. Can he have clean hands? Picks it up with a little give.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth, better.
Welcome back. Big day on 11:16 SEN. But before we head over for live football coverage, Richmond and Geelong met at the G yesterday, both desperate for a victory, and it was the Cats, 12-13-85, Richmond 11-10-76, in front of 45,228, and for the predominantly Tiger-based crowd, there would have been, for much of that afternoon, frustrations at Richmond's inability to once again break lines where it mattered. Yes, there was plenty of run and carry from Basher Hawley as the wide expanses of the G were explored, but the incisive, defining moments came down the guts to Hawkins early. Asprey was moved off him, and then Rance, Robert Shaw, became a classic lineup and match for him, and the fans were treated to a very good battle between the two. Mitch Grigg in a different role. Was good to see him run with Selwood.
Sean
Griggs. Yeah. Sean Griggs. Pardon me. I always get my Griggs.
Very good job.
My Griggs mixed up, but he did very well.
Yeah.
Richmond just don't seem to have at the moment the decisive, daring, not just run, but players that get into the corridor and can present and... It seems a long way home when the Tigers have the ball, and Geelong were the more direct team in that first half, and it took until probably 10 minutes before the halftime break for it to pay dividends, and then there was a small dam burst, and they kicked, I think, four goals in 8 minutes, something like that. And Geelong had a lead that they deserved at halftime, and Richmond, in response to that, took until the second half of the last quarter to just throw all caution to the wind. And I wonder, can you play like that for four quarters? Because at the moment they're in lockdown unless they need to chase something that's gettable in the last 10 to 15 minutes.
Well, it is a pattern that they can chase down and they do free up. They did pay a penalty that because, as you said, Grigg was very good on Selwood early. But to engineer that run, they had to release him and get him part of the running, the outside run that they so badly needed. Marco, the stats you look at about how you set up a team, and, if you're able to go into the game before knowing that Taylor, Enright and Lonergan would take 30 marks between them compared to Rance, Chaplin, Asprey with 13, you know that Taylor and Enright are going to have dominant performances. I'm not sure why Richmond continue to try and create or try and set up the plus one, the loose man back. I've never seen it work fantastically well for them. And what you do, the penalty at the other end of the ground is Taylor free. And if they do have to go to man up him, they can release Enright. So 22 marks between those blokes, you're not going to, over the course of the game, you're not going to beat Geelong.
And that's what happened, because over the course of the game,
Richmond had their...
played that style of football. And then at the end, you roll dice, and there just wasn't enough time. And to be fair, Geelong still, had there been more time, would have had the right to respond as well. The good news for Geelong is that they played Kirsten, and they played the other big bloke up forward.
Walker had 9 marks.
Yeah.
Hawkins, you've well documented. I guess you're entitled to ask the question, why no Rance Hawkins early? You would be entitled to ask that question because it looks one of the great matchups.
Yeah,
and an obvious matchup, but they decided Asprey to Hawkins and
maybe allowing Rance possibly more freedom. So for the Tigers, they just have to start winning for themselves, for their coach, and for Geelong. Who would have thought getting away from Simmons Stadium was the tonic required to win a game? Now, there was a game we spoke earlier about West Coast v GWS. Apart from Dylan Scheel,
Are we finished with the Tigers?
Yeah, we're done.
Oh.
Apart from Dylan Scheel, that entire lineup looked as though they'd gone back 3 years, and West Coast looked like they'd gone back 10 years. Those two teams should not be allowed to meet again until they clear a steward's trial. Because something goes on in those games. We spoke about it earlier.
Something goes wrong in those games.
They go wrong. Anyhow, it was the nail biter, historical nail biter last night with West Coast winning by the length of, well, there's no straight at Subiaco, so we'll say Ascot.
I can't beat
or Belmont.
4-9 for the day.
Oh, they were lucky to get it. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, point our bow straight at live football on 11:16 SEN.
We've run out of time again.
Oh, we've run out of time, but we're going to be heading to the G, and hopefully the Demons don't run out of puff and take the Dockers on after the break. We'll throw to that game.
The Bulldogs have done well. They got involved. Johannesson kicked off the ground. It's all over. The Doggies have won at the SCG. What a win for the ages for the Dogs.
And let's not forget, Easton Wood kicked the Doggies' last goal as well.
But he was up there, thank goodness.
Is good, is Wood. But when we come back,
not so good.
Is bad, is Richmond, same old result against the Catters.